Grizzle Pod, episode 29. Happy Halloween, everybody. Scott Willis, Tom Spooky. George, we are Grizzle. What's happening, everyone? I got a special spooky edition. We don't have a spooky edition. I got nothing.
Inflation spooky.
I don't know. Everyone kind of feels like you need to be thematic. We don't even have like effects, Scott. We don't even have anything teed up for Halloween.
Yeah, I need the Kramer big button that I can whack with something and make some sounds. We're working on it.
I promise you, next Halloween will be a lot better. But the content, oh boy, that's fire.
That's what you came here for.
Let's go. Scott, tell them about our sponsor.
So you guys know, we're sponsored by Y-Charts. Y-Charts is where we go for the nice-looking charts, the sick analysis. That's why we use these guys. Check it out if you haven't already. Y-Charts.
All right. Let's go. Scott, tee us up for the agenda for today. It's been a minute, guys. I know you guys have loved the interviews we've been dropping. We've had so much on our plate, obviously, with the ETF launch coming in not so long away. So stay tuned for that. But yeah, we've had a ton of juggling ahead of that. But we got a good episode here, man. Lots of things. This is the Facebook Hail Mary meta episode, Scott.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so that's what we're kicking it off with. We have something funny to show you. Just want to talk about Facebook a little bit. Whoa, I'm sorry. Facebook is no more. Now it's Meta. Why did they do this? We're going to take you through it, what it might mean for Facebook, the whole industry, and what is the metaverse. I think it's good to talk about that. And then we got to talk about Trump a little bit. The news broke last week, but we haven't addressed it yet. So we got to talk about what's going on with Trump and his new SPAC and his new social media company. And then we're going to talk a little bit about markets outside the U.S. You know, everyone, you hear a lot about North American markets, but there's other places in the world where people are making money. We're going to tell you about one of those. It's India. And then lastly, we got to talk about hyperinflation. Jack Dorsey of Twitter dropping the hyperinflation bomb. So we're going to talk a little bit about what he means and is everything seeing hyperinflation or is it kind of like a mixed up market?
So he's the chief executive officer and the chief hyperinflation officer. Like what's Jack's role there? What's going on?
He keeps taking on more than he can chew, I think.
I just want that company to make money like other social media companies. Yeah. Is that too much to ask, Jack?
You have all these people. They love your platform. They're willing to probably pay a dollar or so. Just ask them.
Yeah. So, let's first talk about, you know what? Looks like all these social media, Facebook itself, existential crisis here, Scott. Mr. Zuckerberg is throwing a Hail Mary of sorts. He's changing the name of the company to Meta, which is like so just like how many people did it take to come up with this stupid ass idea? Like literally, you know what, Scott? Here, I thought of something very important. These guys literally did this in the last 6 months. They just literally changed. It's not like they even had it in the tank from a year ago. You know how I know, Scott?
How?
Why didn't they lock down the ticker Meta a year ago?
Yeah.
How did we get to this point today where someone else who has Meta ETF, Roundhill, they've got the ticker Meta, and these guys have to go with Metaverse? I forget what the ticker is. It's some MT.
Oh, I didn't even look at what the ticker is. I was just looking at the logo. And I mean, it's weird to name your company after like the thing you're trying to disrupt. Usually you'd have some like tangential name that kind of isn't in the ballpark, but is unique to you. But they're trying to build the metaverse, so they just name themselves Meta. I could see it just being like the big evil empire trying to take over the metaverse. And then everyone else is fighting back against them. That's what they didn't want in the first place. That's why they're not Facebook anymore.
No, I just think this whole thing was hurried, rushed, unknown, Hail Mary. This is not a good look for Facebook. I know there's a lot of what you call them, Facebook stands. They call themselves the House of Zuckerberg on Twitter. Oh, these guys are like the worst boomers. But are these the
guys who love Facebook or they hate Facebook?
I don't know. They're fanboys.
Fanboys.
Boomer fanboys of Mark Zuckerberg. They're usually value investors that missed the entire tech run and now have found like some sort of religion in Mark's free cash flow. good for you. Like, literally, that fucking shit didn't work for you for the last 10 years, and now you've just come around to the fact that this thing is gushing out cash flow.
And you're still missing software as a service, which is outperforming Facebook, but oh well.
Oh well.
Baby steps.
But let me be a stand for Facebook, because that's pretty awesome. And, their knowledge of social is just so paper thin. It's this whole idea, this thing is just pushing out cash, wonderful, you know, Zuckerberg for king and all that. But then you're just like, wait a minute. And then the metaverse drops and they don't even know what to say, because they
don't understand it. I've seen like younger people in their 30s have no idea what the metaverse is. And then when they talk about it, you can tell they don't know yet. So I feel like to really understand it, you kind of have to be a certain age range. It helps. Or you tune in here and we tell you about it.
but let's be honest, Scott. And I know like you feel that there's a clearer definition, but I just feel it's like, you know, it's just a cake that I put together, throw it on the wall, a bunch of different things. You know what I mean? It just feels like, hey, it's my other world and I'm not here on Earth. That's the metaverse, right? Like,
that's really all it is, man. It's like, if you can be, there's going to be two worlds. And so everything you can do here, except for the only thing you can't do in the metaverse is eat and sleep and stay alive, right? You got to do that in the real world. Everything
and
else.
Babies, man.
Yeah. Procreate, like all that stuff that's key to life. You're never going to be able to do in the metaverse, but all the other stuff that we care about, commerce, all the commerce stuff, consuming content, you can do all that in the metaverse.
Like half of my going out and hanging out with friends, I have zero interest to hang out with you, Scott, or any of my other buddies if I'm not drinking, if I'm not eating. Like, oh, let's go hang out in this weirdo space and like be like friendly. I'm like, I don't know about this. Yeah. Well, Scott, we got to play the clip. Play this clip. So this came from his like, so the big unveil on the metaverse was yesterday. He played this bizarro clip. I just have no words, Scott, none. None for what this is. Please play the clip. It's just so weird.
It's crazy. I give him credit. You guys should watch this. It gives you a little feel for what the metaverse may look like, but it's just so ridiculous. So we're going to play
it.
Oh,
so weird. So.
All right. I hope you guys are ready.
Hey, are you coming?
Yeah. Just got to find something to wear. All right. Perfect.
He couldn't even change into different clothes. He had to wear his real world clothes.
Hey, what's going on?
I have no idea.
What's up, Matt?
Whoa.
So he's meeting all his buddies.
Huh? Who made this place? It's awesome.
They're playing poker.
It's from a crater I met in LA.
This place is amazing.
Boz, is that you?
Of course it's me. You know I had to be the robot, man.
I thought I was supposed to be the robot.
Whoa. I knew you were bluffing.
So they all have different bodies. They're all playing cards.
Let's call her.
Naomi.
Some of them are floating, others are not.
Hey, should we deal you in?
Hey. Sorry, I'm running late, but you've got to see what we're checking out. There's an artist going around Soho hiding AR pieces for people to find.
So now he's talking to someone in the real world.
3D street art? That's cool.
Send that link over so we can all look at it. This is stunning.
Okay, that is something.
That's awesome. Wow.
I love the movement.
Wait, it's disappearing.
All right, so this
right,
is...
Hold on.
Cut off this junk. Like, so this... So he... Once the stupid AR art, augmented reality art started to pop up on the screen, I'm like, what are you talking about? And there's like, this is stunning. This is awesome. This is neither stunning, neither awesome. These are just freaking worms on a screen moving around. And like, you know, some crappy, like, listen, Scott, I was willing to put up with a lot through this whole NFT bullshit. You know what I mean? Most of this stuff I would not have called art. Let the kids do what they need to do. But I am drawing the line at this BS augmented reality art to say that this is amazing. Love it here. Get out of here.
Yeah, it's pretty short-sighted. Like, the metaverse is about so much more than that. And they're like, oh, you can take art and make it 3D, right? We were doing that 15 years ago.
Like, what I said on Twitter is, like, this is like worse than a B movie, Scott. Like, you think you're unveiling the metaverse. Like, literally, like, I was expecting something so mind blowing. Make it all bullshit. Yeah, you can. Your Facebook You have so much money. You can produce one of the best. You can make one of the greatest, like, fake films of all time. This is fake business right now. Make one of the greatest fake metaverses of all time. And this is what they came up with?
Man, that's totally true. Yeah, you make a good point. They could have shown him, like, going through his daily life and all the different ways he'd be transacting with the metaverse and, like, doing work, talking to people, getting shit totally. Done. But it was just them joking around and, like, looking at art that was squiggly in 3D.
It's terrible. Like, honestly, Scott, if we were going to come up with the definition of the metaverse, I'd first get, like, you know, get a, you know, who are the big action movie guys?
Get one of those guys. Get Schwarzenegger to show up. For something, yeah, exactly. For a cameo. Oh, and The Rock. Get The Rock in there.
Oh, and it needs to be a Jerry Bruckheimer. Bruckheimer.
Big explosions, big music.
Totally. Like, basically, like, the first 5 minutes, some big explosion happens. I feel that I've, like, shrapnel all over my body. But then I wake up out of it, and I'm not in the metaverse anymore. Healthy. Well.
They needed to hire you, man, for that pop and that sizzle.
Exactly. Get ready for the Grizzleverse.
Yeah.
It's going to be coming.
There we go.
Coming. So,
but you have a good chart, right, Tom, that just shows how Facebook, the stock is struggling a bit versus Google.
Yeah. So just to put it into perspective, in great follow on Twitter, Bucko. He's man, this dude's king, man. So the new acronym now is FAAMG. So Facebook, he's his Meta question mark, more like beta. Amazon, day 3, maybe day 4. Apple, Tim Apple, bad at operations. Microsoft, Satya is the GOAT. That is correct, Scott. And Google, perfect business. So let's look at that. Last 5 years, Scott, this is just staggering. So Alphabet, Google's parent, is up 251%. Facebook is up 141%. And SPY, the S&P 500, is up 113%. So, Scott, this to me is incredibly telling, because if you were to come into my house and say, listen, you know, Google's being very bad, I'm going to take away your Google Maps, I'm going to take away your YouTube, and, you know, you'll be better off for it. I'm like, the fuck you are? Yeah. I need that shit.
Yeah, don't get near me.
Now, that's not the same situation for Facebook, right?
No.
And that therein lies, just going to put it in plain English, therein lies the difference between these two companies, right, Scott? Like, that. This is the challenge, right? If Facebook's been naughty on social, and it's this idea, and then you have, we're going to talk about it a bit more on the Trump side, but bottom line is, you got a lot of accusations being thrown at Facebook right now. There's a ton of press, bad press, right, Scott?
I got a good analogy for you. I feel like Google's using Facebook as a human shield. So regulators are shooting just from the hip, just bullets everywhere. Google's just holding Facebook up, and they're not taking any of the hits, right? Like, you've never seen it really a scandal around YouTube. YouTube's just kind of floating around. But, like, Facebook takes all the hits. Twitch takes some hits. So Google's just doing a great job staying under the radar, and they might have the businesses that are the closest you could say to a monopoly, where, like, there's just no one else even competing. Look at search. Who else is in search? No one, right? So,
no one.
So they just keep crushing it. And I think this speaks to maybe why Facebook has now become Meta. Zuckerberg understands that he has an image problem, and he maybe has to find his next avenue of growth, because growth is hard to come by now. They have billions of people on the platform already.
Yeah, so he
sees the opportunity. If there's going to be another digital world, if I can provide the hardware and potentially be the app store, he wants to be the Apple app store of the metaverse. So it's a huge opportunity, but we don't know what the timeline is on this. And he's sinking $10 billion a year into it. So it doesn't come cheap.
And Scott, let me just talk valuation here, because the big question is, well, you know, which one should you own more of? And at this point right now, you've got obviously. Let me talk about the positives. We've
roasted him a bit. This has been a little bit of a roast.
Exactly, we roasted him in a bit. But let's be frank, Scott. If you're ever going to own a company, you want someone like a Mark Zuckerberg, you know, at the helm. This guy is tenacious beyond anything.
No one's
hungrier
than this guy. He's gnawing on the bones of others.
Exactly. literally.
The second he leaves and goes to Hawaii, like, I'm going to Hawaii. I'm not owning this anymore. But this guy doing this pivot, we know that he has a lot of years ahead because now he's hungry. He wants to win this thing.
Wasn't he eating like rodents in college and stuff like that? Like, just to show that he was like fucked up. I think this was a true story.
This is a rumor now that we need to see if it's confirmed or not.
It's absolutely confirmed. You know, I read fringe media, and this is actually his roommates. Like, this dude would just be like eating weird things, like, you know, live things, just to be like, I'm the man.
Oh, just to, like, test it out and be like, I'm crazy.
Yeah, just I don't know, whatever. He's on another planet. You know, some people question his you know, where on the spectrum of human he is. This is the kind of guy that runs a company like Facebook. I say you need to load him up with rodents right now. You need, if this metaverse is gonna work, this mofo needs to be hungrier than any other mofo.
He needs a conveyor belt of rodents, so he's just at the office, just eating and just powered up at all times.
Scott, you've now questioned whether this is true. This is Zuckerberg eating mice, something like this.
100% confirmed. Not a rumor anymore. But, while we're talking about it, it's good to talk about performance of earnings, because Facebook had earnings recently, and they're in that social media group. So yep. If you guys weren't watching earnings, there's been some fireworks this earnings season. One was the social media group, which is Facebook, Pinterest, Twitter, Alphabet, Google, and Snap. So Snap lit things off with kind of an implosion. They said, so Apple is now having, you know, they've changed the settings on your iPhone. So you can say, don't track me. Like, I've seen that. If you have an iPhone, you've seen that option. So that makes it harder for advertisers to identify you and your behavior. So they're not necessarily willing to pay as much right now. It's harder to track and charge. So Snaps came out and said, we're having trouble with this. Like, we'll find a solution, but it's hurting us right now. Stock was down 30% because it's done so well this year. So it doesn't mean like it's a dog this year. It's just, that's what happens when things are expensive. Then Pinterest was trying to sell itself to PayPal. Everyone's like, why are they doing this? They're below their 52-week high. Well, they're probably going to have bad earnings too. And then Facebook, people were worried, but they said, we've been planning for this Apple change for like a year. So they're going to be least affected. And then you will have Google. It's just like, I don't even care. the stock is up 4%, while Snap and Pinterest are down 30% in a week. So that kind of tells you how the market views this.
This is a great, you know, like when you get these quarters that just highlight where the landscape is today, and that performance right there, Scott, highlights exactly the conundrum that's set up. Scott, I think he scrubbed the internet of this truth from college.
we got to start it again, and then suddenly our podcast is going to disappear. We need to write some articles too and put those out in the wild.
Listen, I retract all statements related to Mark Zuckerberg eating live animals, but I will. I found something. The only meat I'm eating is from animals I've killed. That is a actual quote.
Was that something he did for a year? Wasn't it? It was one of his pilgrimage.
Exactly. I can be down with that, and I actually think that's correct.
Better than eating sewer rodents. Okay.
I have to retract my earlier statements.
I wish it was true, though.
We're not going to have a YouTube channel anymore, Scott.
No. We're getting meta now.
Well, they're taking – this is the other side of this, Scott. You know what I mean? Like, talking about YouTube being under the radar, they've zapped in 2 weeks – this dude Gammon, George Gammon, he had like 300,000 followers on YouTube, Scott. They zapped his account, no warning, and then literally just through the power of social media on Twitter, at least, he got his account back. And then there was also what's his name, the big Bitcoin guy.
Pompliano.
Anthony Pompliano, he has something like in the hundreds of thousands of followers on YouTube. Again, his account got zapped, no warning. You know, then he's pleading on Twitter. But what about those other thousands of channels that are much smaller that are just getting zapped. Like, it's clear stuff is happening.
Yeah, it's not equal, which is tough for me. You know, there should be a process where you can get in touch with a person anytime you're banned from this, what could be your livelihood, to understand. Because like with Pomp, it turns out they had a kind of valid reason. They thought he was trying to sell unlicensed coins or doing a coin sale, which you can't do that on YouTube. But they were wrong. That's not what he was doing. But like, you know, sensors are using computers to try to figure it out. But the key,
Scott,
is that someone could find that out.
Hold on, Scott. In that case, it was one reviewer. It came down to one human. Like, literally, some college. Yeah.
And,
like,
and usually you can't even talk to that person. But because he had enough followers, he actually heard from that person why. Smaller accounts, you're banned. You have no idea why.
No. We're going to talk about that a bit later on, just the power of Trump and DWAC. But we got to talk about Bitcoin right now, right?
Yeah, all right. Yeah, I got a chart for you. So we got a chart here that's looking at Bitcoin versus gold just to see what's working, what's not. And it's pretty clear.
This is a wild chart here. So this is going back 1 year. Lots happened in 1 year, Scott. Lots happened in 1 year. So going back 1 year, what do we have here? So gold was $1,907. Bitcoin was $13,620. Now let's fast forward to today. It's clear who was the winner. Bitcoin is $62,000 and change, and gold's at $1,781.
So the interesting thing for me in this chart is, you know, where it looks like gold's outperforming into July of 2021. That was really just Bitcoin selling off, right? We haven't seen strength from gold versus Bitcoin. It's just when Bitcoin's in a bit of a bear market, it's underperforming, but then it like rips back. So I don't know if you have thoughts on gold. It just seems like the flows of money as a store of value are favoring Bitcoin heavily over gold.
100%. And that is exactly what it is. And we're obviously, there was big news this month, earlier this month, on the big Bitcoin ETF launch in the US, BitO. But I will say this, Grizzle has been a structural bull on Bitcoin since day one. If you followed Grizzle since we started, our superstar, just world beating strategist Chris Wood has been on that tip early, and he's one of the few, and I would say only, global strategist who was an early, now this is Wall Street strategist, right?
This is a guy who's been on Wall Street for a long time, and those are usually the guys who are a bit asleep at the wheel on big new moves.
Chris is ahead on everything. Chris was the first one to come out and say, listen, you can't have your head in the sand here. And I'll tell you this, right? He was a big gold bull proponent. And he just said, listen, this has all the properties of digital gold. And he was just saying, listen, you need to own gold and Bitcoin. And he's very transparent and open on how this all lays out, and saying, listen, you own a bit of both, but right now he was very clear saying it's in terms of flow and in terms of the upside for what Bitcoin has, it's monstrous relative to gold. Monstrous.
I mean, for me personally, think about it. Bitcoin has store of value plus optionality of it could become a coin that people use in their daily life. There's just more and more things being built that could use Bitcoin versus gold will always be a store of value. People don't really transact in gold anymore. And if you were transacting, it's not a good thing. It means the world is not in a good spot. So it just seems like there's much more excitement, potential around Bitcoin. And on top, it already does what gold does, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. In the you have this duality that just does not exist with gold, where Bitcoin is now acting as the digital gold, fine, check. But that means you're hoping for the end of the world. We do not hope for that. But the other side of that is you basically have this technology. It's a gateway technology token, cryptocurrency, for what is arguably the future, which is cryptocurrencies, right? And so it's that duality that is just so dynamic here. So this month, Scott, I think you're getting a coming back to your point, Scott, in terms of flows. Let's talk about flows.
Flows, you guys don't understand how important flows are in the stock market now. As we get to a market where there's more and more passive money, that means it sits. It's not people trading like active traders. Small flows have big impacts on the price of things. There's been some really good kind of white papers research put out recently. So this is one of these things where if you can get ahead of seeing where money's going to move, then you can make a lot of money on the price increases or decreases in certain assets. And so this, what we're talking about now is how flows could be impacting the price of Bitcoin.
Well, yeah, and Bitcoin's a big old asset now. And let's, this was, so just to give it a bit of backdrop here, Scott, this was projected. We knew it was going to touch down. And this was one of those cases where not only did Bitcoin, a lot of times they say sell on the news, Scott, you know, when the ETF comes up. No, this was, and we were clear about that. This was the news was the catalyst to run this further, and that's what it did. If you go back to the Bitcoin chart, now we're at 62,000. We were sub 62 prior to the ETF coming out. Now let's get into the details for the ETF. This is the ProShares Bitcoin ETF. Now let's rewind into history. This is a great chart looking at basically how fast it took the largest ETFs to hit a billion. So the fastest ETFs that ever got to a billion, the fastest by country mile was gold. It took 3 days, Scott. Then you had basically silver, which took 46 days. And sorry, the BBJP, I think that's the Japanese hedged ETF. Yeah. So and that took like 16 days. But again, the yardstick here is gold, which makes a ton of sense, right? So before this, Scott, before the gold ETF was around, you would actually have to own a physical thing. You were sending in mailers to get your little bar or some bullshit like that. And now it's a financial vehicle in the GLD and off you go. Well, let's just see, you know, gold bulls will say, well, Bitcoin has, you know, it's not even close, this, that, the other. Let's pull it up. So here we go. On day two, it hit $600 million. Sorry.
Wow.
That day one,
it hit $600 million. Yeah, so out of the gate, $600 million. And then it looks like it was $900 day two?
No, $1 billion, over 1.1. Wow. 1.1.
So it took 2 days.
In 2 days, it breached $1 billion in 2 days. And that's incredible, right? And here we are. We're at $1.125 billion in the ProShares Bitcoin Strategy ETF. Now, this is a great functionality in YChart. It's got to plug those guys. This is where I go when I try to figure out how assets are moving into different ETF strategies. They've got a clean way to do that, to just graph out how the assets are growing. So that is that's what's there, Scott, and that's Bitcoin versus gold. Don't sleep on it. Grizzle has maintained the view you own both, but it's clear for us right now that technology's talking, people are talking, and young money's talking. Don't be caught. Don't be that boomer money that does not want to dip their toes into Bitcoin because
don't be scared away because of these NFTs and these apes and all that stuff. Like there's an exciting world out there, and there's lots of money to be made in Bitcoin. And we can see in this type of thing, the flows are moving in cryptocurrency's favor, and that will be powerful for the prices too.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, whatever Bitcoin does, you're going to have the entire crypto space, right? It's one yardstick, but Ethereum is absolutely blowing the roof off. We'll do another episode. Actually, you know, we'll do a focused interview and all that stuff, Scott. Now, DWAC, let's talk about it.
All right. So first, for everyone who doesn't know, what is DWAC?
Okay. So DWAC is Digital World Acquisition Corp, ticker DWAC. Scott, this is a SPAC. Tell everyone what a SPAC is. Empty vehicle, empty vessel.
Yeah. It's a company that's already public, and then it's going out and trying to find a business. So it's a public company that has no business. And it has cash, and it's looking to buy a business and use that cash to buy the business.
Yep.
So that's a popular way to go public nowadays. If you're a private company, it's just quicker for you to get bought by that public company instead of having to do initial public offerings. So a lot of businesses are taking advantage of different SPACs, and the latest one is Digital World Acquisition. It was sitting around for a while. And then they found, you know, Trump said, I'm looking for a vehicle to buy me. And so I go public, and they said, we'll be the one.
Exactly. And so that was announced last Wednesday. Basically it was full fireworks, Scott. Basically as soon as it was announced in the next 2 days, this thing was up 1500. You had a 15 bagger, Scott.
So did it go to, does that mean it went to like $150 at one point?
Yeah.
So, just to give everyone context, that's crazy because SPACs usually trade for $10 because that's how much cash they have. So they just get $10 of cash. If they don't find anyone to buy, there's still $10 of cash. So that's why it's 10. Then it usually goes up when they announce an acquisition because they're buying a business. What is that business worth? So we've seen in the crazy times in May or March, things went to, you know, 40, maybe 40 was pretty crazy. 25 was crazy. And then this goes to 150. So this is a new high watermark in euphoria.
It just mooned it there. And you know, the clear thing for us is obviously Trump has this megaphone. If people were wondering whether his megaphone has been waning, this should be the answer to that. No question. And, you know, this is a play on Trump. And what I'd say here is basically Trump has become a meme stock on its first day of trading, capturing the hearts and imaginations of YOLO traders, YOLO Reddit traders, and FinTwit traders. Like, basically, this is the dream of every damn stock, that they, on day one, become a meme stock. And he achieved that on day one by going up this amount of money. So how do we think about this, Scott? Just thinking about it. A part of this exuberance was the market sniffing out the demand for right-wing social media alternatives.
Yeah, so there's demand, right? This is uncharted waters because there hasn't been a specific right-wing social media platform yet.
Exactly. And an alternative to the established social media incumbent, namely Facebook, Twitter, Google. And what's the commonality between all these guys, Scott? They are kicking off right-wing people on their platforms.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's right, like, so,
and you know, and censoring what seemed to be more right wing ideas than left wing ideas. One was the origins of COVID, for example, that got you banned on social media. Later on, they're publishing New York Times writing the same thing.
Well, that's it, and you know, the origins of COVID, and then there's also ivermectin, which thank God Joe Rogan clapped back on that when he had Sanjay Gupta on his show, just saying, listen, you guys went out of your way to categorize what I took, ivermectin, as a horse drug,
tranquilizer or something like
tranquilizer,
that.
Get out of here. A billion people on Earth are taking ivermectin. Basically, the person who invented it got a Nobel Prize. You're not getting a Nobel Prize for fixing like a tummy ache for a horse.
Yeah. Let's
get out of here. Yeah. It's for people.
It was a dosage issue, it sounds like, at the end of the day.
But this is the chart, Scott, that really is powerful. And let's pop this chart up. This is basically, partisan divisions have widened over the role of government tech firms in restricting misinformation. Okay, this is a fascinating chart. So if you go back to 2018, Democrats or people leaning Democratic would say 40% of them would say the U.S. government should take steps to restrict false info
online.
Isn't
that interesting? Democrats, Republicans, almost the same in their view on that, whether the government should be involved.
Exactly. So the Republicans said 37% saying we should, you know, the government should help restrict this false info. Democrats 40%. Now fast forward to 2021. 65% of Democrats believe the government should take steps to restrict false info, even if it limits freedom of information. And the Republicans, it used to be 37% that believed that should do that. Now that's 28%. The chasm has grown, right?
Yeah.
And that really is the most telling data right now, Scott, where you're looking at a situation where censorship is at an all-time high on these platforms. The left, Democrats, are saying, listen, do more. Love this stuff. Get more of these guys off here.
Yeah. I hate them anyway. Do my dirty work. Hey, Tom, there's something I'm noticed in this chart. You see there's fall in Republicans who want tech companies to restrict information than the government. So I think that speaks to where Donald Trump was being censored. And so they kind of got mad, even more mad at the tech companies and thought they shouldn't be censoring information versus their view on the U.S. government.
Exactly. Yeah. So then there's this other chart. So there's the U.S. government should do more. Then there's the tech companies should do more to restrict false info online. That was 60% of Democrats believe that in 2018. Now that's 76%. In 2018, that was 48% Republicans, and now in 2021, that's 37%. And so, Scott, the issue here is that you have a in social media, you have a construct right now that I know if you're left-leaning, you'll be like, listen, this is exactly great, fine, but you can't ignore the fact there's this entire there's an entire group of people, Republicans, and it's half of America, Scott, as far as the voting goes, like half of America, that view that basically tech companies are overstepping here, and specifically social media. So you have a dynamic where all the major social media companies are left-leaning valley companies, right, Scott?
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. No, it's a very good way to put it. And just some of those things where they've, you know, put their foot in their mouth, where they've canceled people for certain news items that end up, you know, going on the platform a bit later. It just looks heavy-handed, and it looks not impartial.
So the takeaway here, clear for me. Whether it's Trump media or a tech upstart, the prize to claim the right wing of social media is big, Scott. Big, big, big. Mm-hmm. And that's something that it could be DWAC. It could be Trump's back. And frankly, he's in the pole position. But one thing I did tweet out earlier is the right's not very good at tech. You know what I mean? You know,
not the tech savviest bunch in general.
No, you know, like we know they do media well, but you know, so does the left. But in terms of tech and the, you know, tech minds here, it's not the forte. Like there was the Parler app, Scott, it got hacked. And I said, listen, as soon as Trump releases his social media app, whatever it is, you know, Trump media, social media, whatever it is called, within a month, there will be a big the data breach, without a doubt. A big hack.
Yeah, for sure. So someone's already figured out how to sign up when they said that there weren't signups yet. So it has already been breached to some extent.
Oh, yeah. Someone took Donald Trump or something like that, right?
Yeah, they took his avatar.
But here's for those in Techland listening, if you're a senior executive at Google, Facebook, Twitter, the best thing you can do for your career right now is go out and help Trump, because literally where they are short is senior tech executives that can step in and really basically firewall this app that we know is going to be in trouble. Any social media upstart is gonna have a challenge with respect to privacy of data and keeping data non-breakable.
Very true. This is the beginning of an interesting time, mm-hmm. because we've always had the media. There's right-wing media, left-wing media, kind of in the middle. It's gotten more spread out. But social media has generally been more left-leaning. So this is the first time we got like a big push for this right-leaning. They admit that they're right-leaning social channels. So we'll have to see if he's a big enough personality to drive enough people. There's probably a lot of demand there.
The other question is too, right? You know, could there be, you know, this is all very, the precedents are huge, right? You have an ex-president who is starting a right-wing social media channel. Now, obviously, you may have had more fringe right-wing social media apps. Remember, there was the issues where servers wouldn't house them. You know, you're getting people saying, listen, they're not on my server, not on this server.
Yeah, so Trump probably is the pull to you know, get all that locked down. Give people a platform.
Exactly. So you think that that's the issue. And I guess the ultimate question is, you know, how does he ultimately the way it starts to derail, right, is that, you know, once you have the established neo-Nazis or whatever start to like, say, hey, listen, love this Trump app, the greatest, you know, yeah, and he's got to start policing that and all that, you know, but as someone had told me, if that's the case, then it's obviously the app's done well, the stock's done well. So anyhow.
The stock may have gotten ahead of the app, but we'll see.
Yeah, well, I'm not so certain about that, Scott. Here's what I will say, and probably for a future episode, is looking at napkin math here. I think the prize for right wing social is so big, Scott. This is like a $3 billion market cap right now. I'm not. Of course, I have a lot of question marks around, you know, their technological capability to do all of this. But Scott, imagine they do. This is not a $3 billion company.
Oh, no. That's very right? true, actually.
Right. Yeah. Imagine they do. And of course, I'm not saying this is like, you actually you don't have Captain Zuckerberg here, right? This is not a guy eating mice
in the sewers of New York City.
In the mess hall of the ship here. Yeah, this is anyways, guys, I detract that statement for now until I find because I know it's been scrubbed.
You're gonna find that article, it's been scrubbed. It's printed out physically somewhere. You gotta find it.
It was his ex-roommate, Scott, but I guess a lot of ex-roommates do this kind of shit. Especially
That Ricardo Saverin? I don't know. I'm just remembering from the movie.
This guy was the worst. He used to eat mice.
It was like that roommate you have when you first start college, and then you guys always go your separate ways and you both hate each other.
Except one guy becomes a billionaire, the other guy,
he's the one eating mice now.
Oh man, I may have got my tech billionaires mixed up. It happened, Scott. Someone else may have done this. Yeah. I'm feeling anyways, I have to appeal to the censors for the YouTube channel. Yeah. So okay. I apologize. Put it out there. Scott, what do we got? India.
Ooh. So you guys have been sleeping on India. We've been so focused on America and Canada and North America and maybe Europe a little bit, but India is the sleeper story here. I have a chart for you guys. It's showing performance this year of the S&P 500, the QQQ, which is NASDAQ, and First Trust India Nifty 50. It's like the Dow Jones for India. It's 50 biggest companies. The thing's been knocking the lights out. It's up 30% while the U.S. market's up 20%. So that's some big outperformance. You can see here it dipped a bit when they were having their COVID surge, but now they're kind of having a renaissance because vaccines are ramping up, people are getting back to work, and there's just a lot of – the setup is still good for India. They go through these big multi-year CapEx cycles, and there's been a downturn because of COVID, and now it looks like that CapEx cycle is setting back up. So number one, you have – monetary policy is easy, like in the Western world. So that's key. They're not raising rates anytime soon. Inflation is starting to fall. Unlike in North America and Europe, we see inflation is actually picking up and it's not as transitory as people were thinking. In India, actually this month fell from the prior month. So that's a good sign. They don't need to, you know, raise rates anytime soon. Also, you have housing affordability. I have a chart here.
And the other aspect there, I'll let you keep going on.
Yeah, I'll just finish it up quickly. Yeah. So there's a chart just looking at affordability of housing in India. It's just your home loan payment divided by income. And this is the ratio. Everyone loves to talk about housing prices to income, but that's not really what matters, right? Who cares what's happening with the housing price versus your income? It's can you pay your mortgage? Can you pay your rent? And so it shows in India, it's actually never been cheaper to own a home, except for maybe 03, but it's kind of back to the lows. So it's cheap to own homes. People are registering houses, a lot of buying. And construction is, I think, 12% of the of jobs in the economy. So it's kind of getting everything going again. So it's one of these things where everything is set up for another big CapEx cycle in India. And that's good for all of these companies. So just because India's outperformed for now, it looks like it's set up to continue doing well. So I would recommend you take a deeper look at India and don't count it out.
Yeah. And you know, just FYI, this is coming from our global strategist, Chris Wood, who is an emerging market strategist, right? So he was based in Hong Kong. He's a big, he sees the world from that, from the EM lens. Mm-hmm. One thing I would say here, Scott, one interesting part is that, potentially we are seeing another tailwind here for India is flow of funds that are now potentially bypassing China, saying, wait a minute. And our good friend Perth Toll, she obviously runs an emerging markets ETF that basically, you know, looks at human rights, which China's not there and neither is India. But if you were to just pan back a bit here, just looking big picture, we could be seeing a situation where your incremental emerging market dollar is saying, I'm going to put it in India versus China.
Yeah, actually, that's the one thing I didn't mention. If you look at the flow of funds from abroad into the Indian stock market, it picked up a lot at the end of last year. But the last 6 months, it's fallen to almost nothing. And domestic buying has made up the slack. That's why the stock market's been doing well. But what if you get that outside flow of funds picking back up again? Because it was running at a really high level and it's kind of fallen off. But it shows that international investors are not putting money into it like they did in the last bull market cycle, 03 to 08. Yep. So there, that would be a tailwind. As we talked about, flows of money would have impacts on the price of the indexes.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're not getting in late as far as international investors are concerned. Indians have woken up to the stock market, but not outsiders.
Yeah, and that's always, it's one of those things, right, where the domestic buying is usually what leads, is usually the leader, right? And then you'll get foreign buying in. And you got an interesting backdrop. So yeah, so that's, if you want to make sure you're getting that, grizzle.com/subscribe. Correct me if I'm wrong. They get everything with that, right, Scott? They get the Chris Wood.
Yeah, you get our weekly, which highlights everything, including Chris Wood. And then you'll get Chris Wood once a week. And if we have any, big thought pieces or anything like that, that's the best way to kind of get the best of Grizzle. I would just remind people, you see this stuff and it's not very familiar. It's like it's a mental thing, right? You're like, I know the U.S. stock market so well. I see this article in India. It looks kind of interesting, but I don't know. I don't want to deal with it. Don't ignore it next time, because if you had bought this market, you would have outperformed by 10% this year versus the U.S. with all the YOLO stocks and go-go stuff and all the excitement in the U.S. India beat the pants off the market. So it's always worth taking a look at what's going on outside North America, because it may end up working out for you.
Yeah, it's got diversification benefits too. So yeah, so we'll keep you informed on that one. Now we got an interesting one here with our man,
Mr. Dorsey,
Jack
of Twitter.
Dorsey, CEO of dual companies, Twitter and Square. One has done incredibly better than the other.
I thought he was CEO and his beard is chairman. Or something like that. They split the duties, I heard.
Some duties, man. That beard has gotten out of control. Out of control.
It's a statement piece.
Yeah. So our chief executive officer, our chief inflation officer, hyperinflation officer, this was his tweet, October 22nd. Hyperinflation is gonna change everything. It's happening. Now that is a damn tweet, man. That's like, you don't throw around the word hyperinflation for nothing, because on the other side of hyperinflation, there is never a good thing, Scott. There is never a positive.
No, it's not good for anyone if there actually is hyperinflation.
I just don't know why he's tweeting this. I just would rather my CEO of Twitter focus on like Twitter. I call me old fashioned, but that's kind of, he's gone full Bitcoin, red pill, blue pill, whatever the kind of color pill is. And he's, this is the problem. Again, go to our previous episodes. I talk about this at great length. Do not get too enamored with Bitcoin or gold, especially the end of the world side of the thesis there, and everything goes caca, because then you start to do this. You start to say, hey, listen, hyperinflation going to change everything. You know what? Should I be getting guns now, Jack? What should I do? Yeah. What should I do?
This gets a little bit in the realm of, government measures of inflation are false and they don't look at the real things we're spending money on. But then if you look at actually the basket, it could get stale, but it's the way you spend your money. It's like rent is 30%, whatever. So it gets, you can kind of go down the deep end on hyperinflation's already here. We're just not measuring it, but that's not really the case.
Yeah. And hyper's a big number, right? Like I think it's the yardstick for
inflation versus hyper, different things.
And we've been very clear this, we are in a very strong inflationary episode, but to say that hyperinflation, the kind of stuff that happens in Venezuela, the kind of stuff that happens in Zimbabwe, is coming to America. Now that is a damn statement, man.
Because that hyperinflation means runaway inflation. It means it's hard, very hard to stop, and it just kind of feeds on itself. And we're not seeing that. We're seeing higher than usual inflation right now, and it could get higher. We've talked a ton about how to prepare for that, but it's not hyperinflation yet.
Yeah, then you get into that world of all those people that are just basically like, those people that have like guns and foodstuffs and all that sort of stuff. And I'm not saying, listen, I got a jerry can, an empty one, Scott. It's not filled with anything. It's a big one.
You run out and fill it if you need to.
Everyone's got a little prepper in them, man.
I just know all those preppers from 2020. I remember this one guy on Twitter. He bought like a room full of rice. That dude must be tired of rice now. Yeah, he has so much rice left.
No, but I guess, you got to go through it, right, a little bit. Yeah, like what
or you
are those,
throw it out, but I think he spent $10,000 of rice, something like that.
No way.
Yeah. He did videos because at the time he was like, look at me, I'm all prepared, you're not prepared. So he was bragging about how much he spent on his spam and his rice. And he seems like he likes to pinch pennies, so he's eating the rice, he's eating the spam.
And I love these guys because, you know, the ones that are doing all this stuff like this, like, oh, you know, like, watch me and watch my, like, extremeness. And then I've got a course to sell you. I've got some sort of, like, or I'm selling you the actual, like, package of food. Like,
or which consulting. $300 an hour. I'll tell you how I bought the rice.
Totally, yeah. So you either got consulting or what's the wackadoodle there, Jones?
Alex Jones?
Alex Jones, right? Alex Jones is selling a bone broth and like entire capsules that can last you for a year. Like, it's madness over there. But that it's funny that a CEO is going down this road. But let's get to the next chart, Scott, because I think this really breaks it all down in terms of thinking about inflation and how to do it.
That's a great
Balaji
one.
Is a phenomenal follow. This dude is like surfing the future, man.
On Twitter, he's Balaji S.
Yes. Yeah, this guy's just amazing, right? So Jack Dorsey's out there saying, listen, hyperinflation's coming. It's here, you know, very cryptic. Kathy Wood on the other side saying, listen, deflation, that she had a big thread about it. She's been dead wrong about commodities, so let's leave that aside, specifically oil. But Balaji's, you know, playing statesman here, saying Jack and Kathy are right in different ways. Everything technology disrupts will see prices fall. Everything the state yes. subsidizes will see prices rise, like the graph low, but even more extreme. Now, that is a profound statement if I've ever heard one. And I think that is one. And this is why we are bullish on technology, very bullish on technology, because anything that can deliver you deflation and make a damn good margin at it is a pretty good business, guy.
Yeah, yeah. So what this tells you is when prices are rising, if a company's selling something where prices are going up, they may have some pricing power, but technology prices are always falling. You're not gonna be able to charge as much for your software as, you know, 2 years from now, but technology companies still have made lots of profits, and there's new companies all the time that are doing things. And so it doesn't mean that they're bad businesses versus, you know, commodities are good businesses.
Well, you know, what technology brings is change and disruption. And what it does is it takes away friction, right? So right now we're on Skype doing this, but when we have a guest on, it'll be Zoom. And what before we would have to have that interview, Scott, that wasn't that long ago. They'd be coming up here and sitting beside me. I'd have to arrange all the bullshit around, like, okay, listen, you know, get the times right. And, you know, all the time around. Now that dude or that woman just calls in and life is good. And if someone's running late, no biggie, I got other stuff to do. But that is the kind of time savings that technology brings you and the kind of productivity that delivers. Meanwhile, on the other side of that, when you think about healthcare, college tuition, surely, Scott, on college tuition, this is an incredible chore. So this is going back how far, Scott? I can't see that close. 1998. To 1998 to basically today.
So it's yeah. 20, that was a 20-year chart.
Yeah, okay, 20 years. College tuition fees have gone up 190%. 190%. I am not sure that you're getting 190% more stuff in your brain.
No, there's huge pitfalls to college now, because before you could kind of just go to whatever college you want and you get a good enough job that you pay off your loan if you had a loan or whatever. The return on investment was good. But when it's this expensive, if you make the wrong pick on college and you have, say, $250K of student debt, your job won't be able to pay that off and you're kind of stuck in a tough spot. So now the decision is not as easy as it was. You have to know more to say, I'm not going to go to this online school that's charging $20K a year. I need to go to a better school if I'm really going to be, you know, paying that much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the other side is like there's somebody who runs the Wendy's Twitter account, Scott, and they are hilarious. They are hilarious.
They get
and
free like, reign, right, to kind of do whatever they want.
And I can guarantee you how much I could care less what college would that Twitter account who runs that Twitter account is worth at a bare minimum $500,000 a year. Up to $1 million, maybe more. Yeah. This is and how much education? I'm not saying where their education came from. it matters none. Nada.
No, so we're definitely in a world now, you can learn so much through the internet, connecting with people. You don't need a formal education at all. You just need to be one of those people that knows enough to go and search that out. I think if you're not, that's fine. Although there's a lot of people going to college who are like, I don't know what I want to do with my life. I want to drink. But that just means, I think, you, if you're going to pay the big bucks, you need to go to a better school, because the name alone will get open doors for you to starting your career. Other than that, well, you see people on Twitter, they've kind of made their own career.
Well, the best career exists not on Twitter, not on any social media. And I'll tell you what it is. It's being a plumber. It's being an electrician. It's being a trades in any way, shape or form. If and this is, you know, this is truly, you know, we have so many people who want to aspire to like some level of
wear a suit. You just want to wear some type of suit, but just you can kill it wearing a t-shirt and jeans.
Yeah, and kill it really well. And that really is the best ROI right now, is in the trades. And right now we have such a huge gap in terms of the number of people willing – the number of people there to do the job. It just can't get anybody. So that is a huge thing. But inflation, especially when you get into – we've talked at great lengths about the commodity inflation, the malinvestment, the lack of thereof investment in the last – 50 years, and why we're seeing the inflation wave in commodities. But to blanket talk of hyperinflation, you better have backup here, because we are living in the technology era. And if Mark has his way, Scott, the metaverse better be fucking cheap. Better be cheap.
Yeah. Everything digital better be cheap than the real world.
Hey guys, thank you. Episode 29. It's been a blast, Scott.
It has. It hasn't been as spooky as we promised, but next year we'll make it up to you.
Next year. So we do it again.
Yeah. All right. Take care, everyone.